Welcome to the debut of Crazed Culture, the podcast where we explore and dissect the most popular fads from decades past. Let's find out what was popular when our parents were kids or take a nostalgic trip down memory lane from our own childhood. Merriam-Webster defines fads as practices or interests followed for time with exaggerated zeal. Craze. While some fads and trends do indeed fall into the temporary category, others remain icons to this day. This week, I bring stand-up comedian, podcaster, and I should also mention one of my college dorm mates, Salty Aaron from Orlando, Florida, onto the show to go back to 1999 and go down the rabbit hole of the digital music service Napster.
College students are making good use of the internet. The latest software makes it a bit too easy for students to access their favorite tunes.
My name is Salty Aaron. I am a local podcaster and comedian from Orlando, Florida. I have been a comic for on and off for about 10 years. I've been a podcaster on and off for about 5 years. I used to go to school with Chris oh so long ago. And we used to drink at Marty's and make really bad decisions together constantly. Even some that are questionable even to now. I wonder if we still have charges pending against us.
So like we lived on the same floor for, my memory's so bad.
Oh yeah, mine too.
For a year, but we're at college together for like 2002 to
2006, I believe, is when I graduated.
Okay. So I finished up and I already had 2 years under my belt. So, yeah.
You got a swell JUCO under you before you came to Eastern Illinois University.
I did. So the topic we're going to talk about is very appropriate because I remember some things distinctly about moving into the dorms that relate to this topic. So, what's the first word that pops in your head when you hear Napster?
Metallica bad.
Okay. Because mine is Justin Timberlake. And I think that's just because he plays that one of the founders in that Social Network movie. So, and I don't know why. Every time I hear Napster, I think Justin Timberlake.
Right. That works.
So, all right. So think back to 1999.
That was an awesome year.
The music industry is rolling in cash. You know, the CD business was really through the roof back then. And sadly for the music business then, in a dorm at Boston's Northeastern University, a software coder is about to blow it all apart.
Oh yeah.
So founded just to give a little background information here. Founded as a pioneering peer-to-peer file sharing internet software that emphasized sharing digital audio files, typically songs in MP3 format. Napster was launched in June 1999, and it was pretty short-lived, at least for Napster 1.0, until July 2001. And we're going to unpack that a little bit. Within a year after 99, they had tens of millions of users. Napster's been called the fastest growing business of all time, accredited for revolutionizing the music industry, no doubt, and considered to be the precursor to iTunes.
Oh, yeah. And so much more than that. I mean, the evolution of Napster literally changed the way that we view the entire music industry, not even like to a point where we were digitally exchanging files and pirating them to each other, which I'm sure you're going to get into in just a short bit.
Yeah. So I was going to, even the whole MP3 thing, I'm just thinking back to then, you know, CDs stored just such a small amount of, you know, data and audio tracks, especially for a full length album. Internet speeds back in the early 90s sucked, so it didn't make sense to copy those files and send to friends. MP3 compression format came along in 1993. Things got easier. You know, songs could be compressed into a lot smaller sizes, making it easier to rip music from CDs. So I was doing a little more research, and I found there was, and I don't remember this. Let me know if you do. There was an organization called the Internet Underground Music Archive.
I fairly remember just that name. I don't really remember the extent of what they were all about.
So it was kind of like a precursor to Napster, but what they did is they kind of had a venue for unsigned artists to share music and communicate with audience. So sounds similar to Facebook or Instagram, but
right.
They're considering that the birthplace of online music. But so going back, what you're talking about, the moving into the dorms where we were at college, I remember downloading music like crazy.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if it was particularly Napster. Like I said, I can't remember. There were so many different services out there. Like, I used one. I think it was called Kazaa or
Kazaa was
SoulSeek.
One.
Yeah,
SoulSeek, SoulSeek was one. Kid. And but, LiveWire was really, really basic back then. But yes, it was also one of the major hitters back then.
Yeah, I just remember getting in the dorms. I was so excited. We had fast internet. And I think what ended up happening is I think they ended up blocking it.
And we found selective ways to get around it all the time. Now, I think that was the edge. We were like edgelords back then because me and used to try to download all the strange, obscure music that we could possibly have and then share it with each other and show each other how badass and weird of music that we could find. I remember that being a very prominent thing that we did a lot.
Yeah, and I was just a couple months ago, I went through my old CD collection and I had stacks and stacks of burned CDs that just had Sharpie marker scribbles on them. And all of those were pirated CDs. And I'm hope there's a statute of limitations. I mean, that was 15 years ago. So
who knows? I remember sitting in high school because, like you said, you were 2 years ahead of me. So I remember in high school that I was sitting at my parents' house. This could have been college. And I remember downloading my very first Coheed and Cambria / Converge album. And I had made, that was my first introduction to either of those bands. And due to the fact they both had C names, they both made the same bootleg CD.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
I remember, even before we went away to college, I was sitting at home. I just remember downloading music and I would like start downloading a album and then like get in my little car as a teenager and go run errands and come back like 6 hours and it was still downloading.
Oh yeah. Because of the peer-to-peer sharing was so terrible everywhere. Because you would always have to wait, especially with SoulSeek. I remember sitting in my dorm and we were talking. I was like, hey, is that new Boy Sets Fire record out? Do you have that fully downloaded yet? And I was like, no, man, it's taking like 3 days because no one was sharing the one copy that was available. And everybody was still trying to grab that one copy. And we were all seeding off of each other. It's freaking hilarious.
Oh, man. it's just nuts thinking about that. So as Napster specifically, I probably tried to use it. I'm pretty sure I used like an incarnation of all of those file sharing softwares just to see which one worked the best. But, I think Napster was getting the most, momentum and the most recognized. So I think that's why they kind of got hit the hardest. Just the guys that were behind it. So
I also think that Napster had something that the others didn't, is they had this data archive of all of these albums that when they were coming out of like Sam Goody and early sales things, that they were able to grab like the early master files and then produce, be able to set that album out even months before. I remember downloading Eminem's The First Slim Shady album. And that whole thing was like around back then, but at the same time, it was like a month before he was even expected to be like on MTV. Like that's how weird it was. is that people were grabbing stuff so early. And I think it had something to do with everything that was in like those old Whereas websites. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, I think they got a lot of their digital content from those old back servers.
Yeah, that's I would like to go down a rabbit hole and look more into that. I mean, that's wild. That's pretty much the whole Metallica thing, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I was looking into that today, and because I don't remember what happened with that, but basically it was that they discovered a demo of their song was out, and it ended up being played on several radio stations across the U.S.
Yeah.
So, but we'll dive more into that. So, yeah, I mean, that ties right into eventually, you know, they ran into legal copyright issues. Obviously, I remember when I started hearing about this going on with Napster, I was afraid cops were going to show up at my house.
Oh, the level of paranoia for a bunch of stoners back then was beyond that. Like, I remember sitting in my Sigma Nu dorm room like, man, are they going to catch me blasting? Such a bad song.
I just remember sitting at my parents' house, taking up all our internet, and this was dial-up internet at my parents' house, and just downloading all these new punk rock hardcore bands and thinking, are they going to show up at my house? And
yeah, because it was that whole thing. Like, I think that's really where we started to see like the advertising marketing campaigns that if you would steal a car, you wouldn't steal a car. Why would you steal an artist's music? You know what I mean? I really started seeing, I think that was the evolution of like really the whole common man becoming the pirater, you know?
Yeah, but even I remember, you know, people, it was coming out in the news, people were actually getting busted for downloading the music and stuff. And so they were obviously onto them and knew how to find these people. So I remember hearing a lot of stories of that. So
do you want to go down memory lane for just a half a second? Because I remember something very specific that I don't know if you remember or not. We had a guy in our dormitory who was obsessed with Dave Matthews Band. Do you remember that dude?
Vaguely.
Yeah. Okay. So he actually was the only one that I know that took up all the bandwidth on the floor to download every Dave Matthews thing. And they had like a subwoofer in their room. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Now I do.
Oh, yeah. That guy literally was taking up so much bandwidth that they actually like limited the amount. I think that's when they started blocking everything. Is because of that dude. He was literally in the like the archives of Dave Matthews Band. He had every recording from like their first show to I think whenever we left that dorm room. He was downloading all the time.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I just remember this too. I seem to remember when they stopped us from downloading. I could be making this up, but I seem to remember because you already mentioned this about finding ways around it. I seem to remember like somebody knowing someone that worked in IT at the school or something that was able to find like a loophole or something.
It was like the early anonymity programs where we were able to like bypass the firewall that was so graciously terrible. It was like the weakest fire. It was like, oh, we're going to turn on the little switch now and nobody's going to do anything bad.
Yeah, man. All right. So, so they started running into legal difficulties. People start getting arrested. I don't know when I stopped downloading music, probably kept doing it for years and years and years. But, so Napster, it basically, in following the lawsuit here, we'll talk about that with Metallica, but it basically, stopped services and went bankrupt, but
very publicly, by the way.
Yes.
Like it was. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just remember that they took this kid who looked like he was about, I don't know, 20, 22 years old, and he just looked like he was getting the world was just beating him down for creating a music-to-music peer sharing program over copyright issues. I remember that the whole music industry was like, we are going to literally persecute this guy to absolute no end. And they were doing that to other people as well. Like, as you said, there was like arrests like once a week. And there was that little bit of paranoia that we all felt every time we were downloading a song. It was so bizarre.
Yeah. So Sean Fanning was one of the founders. And Sean Parker was the other, who is played by Justin Timberlake in Social Network.
Right.
So what do you do?
I'm an entrepreneur.
You're unemployed.
I wouldn't say that.
What would you say?
That I'm an entrepreneur.
Well, then what was your latest preneur?
Well, I founded an internet company that let folks download and share music for free.
Kind of like Napster?
Exactly like Napster.
What do you mean?
I founded Napster.
Sean Parker founded Napster.
Nice to meet you.
But I don't know. Sean Fanning took most of the heat. So I don't know. Sean Parker must have been more of like the investor. Right. I'm not sure. But so those two dudes, just to give some background, met over the internet, like in a chat room when they were 15 and 14 years old. They were bored. They were programming. And they're like, dude, let's create this music site and take over the world. Basically.
And so they literally Fanning, did.
Yeah, and Fanning originally worked with Electronic Arts. He was developing video games. He founded some other tech startups that really didn't go anywhere. Mm. So the whole Metallica thing too, we'll get to that in a second. But I was reading today, so Sean Fanning got invited, and I don't remember what year this was, but it was shortly after the whole lawsuit when Metallica sued them. He was invited to present at the MTV Video Music Awards.
No, no kidding.
And he came out wearing a Metallica t-shirt and For Whom the Bell Tolls was playing in the background. And someone asked him, and I don't remember, I'm going to have to find this on YouTube, whether it was an interview or if it was during when he was up there, but someone had said, hey, where'd you get that shirt? And he says, a friend of mine shared it with me.
Nice.
And Lars Ulrich was sitting in the audience, and he obviously wasn't impressed.
Right. So.
Every day I find myself smack dab in the middle of a music war between fans. I try to justify hip-hop to pop, alternative to mainstream, and rap to rock. But what I do is nothing. And the battle to which I'm a part of is nothing compared to the battle of this next guy's fight. In the last year, this teenager has developed a technology that has revolutionized the way we all get our music, and he is here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, creative Napster, Sean Fanning. Nice shirt.
You like it? You like it?
Yeah.
Actually, a friend of mine shared it with me. I'm thinking about getting my own, though.
All right. I think we need to get on with this introduction as quickly as possible.
Yo, the sooner I can get off the stage, the better. Yeah.
You and me both.
And this is the same guy here that made it on the cover of Time magazine as well. So Sean Parker, or Justin Timberlake, who I want to call him, he was the first president of Facebook. He co-founded several other startups. Dude has a ton of money. Apparently also did all this while doing a lot of cocaine.
Oh yeah. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? It's clearly the best choices to make as a software engineer.
Yeah. So he went through some problems with that. And, I think that's in, have you seen The Social Network?
I have the Facebook one. Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, a lot of that story overlaps because Sean Parker's featured in that with starting Facebook and then going on to start Napster. So
that's nuts.
Yeah. Interesting enough. So Spotify, what it is today, we all know what Spotify is.
Oh yeah.
Sean Parker actually was a huge investor in Spotify back in 2009 too. So.
Well, good for him. He learned the business early and then curbed it. He realized what he needed to do in getting music licenses and all that wonderful stuff like that, at least to do it as legit as possible and avoid fighting the iTunes battle. He went a totally different aspect.
Yeah, so I guess he does a lot of like philanthropy work too. And I don't know. All I have to say is I guess if you have a history like his, I think you'd want to donate as much money and do whatever you can to make your name better since you
did a lot of cocaine and get sued.
So,
well, I will never forget that he was one of the people that literally saved the entire world of music from being completely devoured by the recording art, the recording industry. Like it has always set a bad precedent and a bad taste in my mouth about like these large corporations that tell you what is music and what to listen to and everything like that. I mean, we still have a lot of payola that happens with radio stations and stuff like that. But now if you look at it, you as an independent artist now can get any kind of love based on your own ability to use the internet.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of back to the basics now. And yeah,
it's like the guy in the garage with the little PV Bandit can actually make a decent album and becomes basically Skrillex.
Basically. Okay, so I don't know if you were ever a Metallica fan, but this whole thing do anything to your likelihood of Metallica at the time?
At the time, I always thought Metallica only had four good albums until I checked them out later as the guitarist I was eventually wanting to be. It took a long, long time for me to understand and appreciate what Metallica was and thrash metal and their contribution to it. But that whole thing at the time, I was not a like, oh man, I love Metallica. This is so lame of them. I was like, right off the bat, I was like, this is freaking lame. Like, top 10 dumbest things I've ever heard of why a musician or an artist would go after someone who is just trying to expose new people to music, especially Metallica. Because at the time, I didn't know who they were. I mean, I knew who they were. Everybody knew who they were. But if you were if you were listening to Whom the Bell Tolls, you were already a Metallica fan. But if you were listening to like the Black Album, or at the time, I think their big album was like Garage Inc., if you remember correctly. I think that was the same time frame, and they were just getting ready to release their major comeback album, like Load or Reload or something like that, whenever that came out. And I think it was just like poor planning, because I think that's where Metallica lost a lot of their fan base, because of their outrageousness and their acts in public and stuff. And it really, really kind of put a stain for a long period of time, at least for me, when it concerns Metallica.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. So the whole thing was, and I mentioned this earlier, a demo of their song "I Disappear" appeared on Napster, and I remember tons of albums on those file sharing softwares being demos. I remember downloading entire albums and realized what the heck is this? These are demo songs. But apparently, because of that, several radio stations across the U.S. started playing these songs like months before the album even came out, which today, you know, artists actually love it when their albums get leaked. At least some do.
Oh, yeah, some. Because it's media exposure for them. It's like, oh, my God, right. I'm supposed to act pissed for like a few days, but then I'm really just going to drop my first single anyways.
Right. Yeah. So this was March 13th, 2000. Metallica filed a lawsuit against Napster. And that just created a domino effect with more artists coming forward. I think Dr. Dre, Madonna were some of the first few others that started suing Napster. And then even record labels started doing that. And of course, Napster lost all of these lawsuits.
Right, right.
Hello? Hey, frat boy. What the hell do you think you're doing, man?
Holy crap! Do you know who you are? You're freaking Lars Ulrich from Metallica! I love everything you do! Except for that bad show you hosted.
You know what? Maybe I wouldn't have to whore myself out if you f***ing kids didn't steal my music.
We're not stealing, okay? We're just sharing with each other, you know?
So it's like if I take this soda can right here, take a sip out of it.
Oh my God! I'm sharing my soda with Lars Ulrich!
And you know what? I'm just sharing 10 years of groupies with you, frat boy.
They didn't have the social backing to take on some kind of huge, basically large scale lawsuit after another, you know?
Yep. So they eventually closed down, declared bankruptcy. And that was the end of that phase of Napster. The funny thing is, so Sean Parker has made far more money than any of these artists who ever suffered from Napster, which I think is a major kick in the butt to Metallica anyway.
Oh yeah. Like you think of the merit of like who Metallica is in the test of time, you know what I mean? What they have done for metal and everything. At the same time, Sean Parker is just the dude with a crap ton of money who could now sue all these artists and get them. You know, it's a nice little reach around for the whole opportunity that they were given. You know, it's kind of funny to me as well.
Yeah. So just when you thought Napster's brand and logo were gone, they were acquired by Roxio, actually. And if you remember Roxio, they had this software out, which was one of the original softwares for burning CDs and DVDs. If you bought a computer like back in the early 2000s, like it would come with Roxio, and that's the software you use to create those CDs. So that's kind of ironic.
Yeah, I'm looking up Roxio on the internet to just get a little bit of a refresher on this. And like even now they're still in business. But most of their stuff is sold at like Barnes and Nobles and like secondhand shops is what I'm seeing right now. There's not really anything that they're pretty much known for anymore. It says they're mostly for setting up digital media projects, media conversion software, and content distribution systems. Oh, that sounds like Napster.
So they rebranded it Napster 2.0. That's more my memory of Napster because that's when it converted into more of a paid subscription. So I think this was about 2008. Napster was then purchased by Best Buy for like $121 million.
Oh, shit.
And then a few years later, they merged with another software, which I remember and I used called Rhapsody. I don't know if you remember that one.
I know the name. Yes, it was like a peer-to-peer downloading service as well, but it was different, right? Am I correct on that?
It's basically like it's like the Spotify now. It was like the first iteration of what Spotify is, because I remember Rhapsody being one of the first ways. Or one first subscription music service that I could put on a phone, and then I had my phone that I could actually download music and listen to it. So,
I don't think I think I missed that for some odd reason. That Rhapsody was, you know, just I was like, I looked at it and I was like, this is lame. I'm just gonna go back to using Napster.
Yeah. So the problem is at the same time. Yeah, the same time is kind of when. Like Apple Music and was first starting to come out and people were starting to, I don't think iPhones were out quite yet. iPhones didn't come out till like 2015 or 2016 or whatever, but
was the iPod before the iPhone?
That's, you know what? I was just playing trivia the other day and that was a question and I don't remember the answer, but I think the answer is yes.
Okay. I think Sprint was still doing like really soft openings of their first touchscreen phone at that point in time. I know that Blackberries were like relevant then. So,
yeah. Yeah. So Napster didn't go away. Rhapsody a couple of years ago got rid of their name because they got beat out by all the other Spotify's and Apple Music, and they went back to being branded just as Napster. So, and then they started doing on-demand music similar to what Spotify is doing now in Apple Music. And I think that's all they're doing now. And I have no idea how they're competing. So,
well, if they're not a household name, then that pretty much tells you where their status is in the world. You know what I mean? Like, cause you can pull up Napster right now. I'm just going to Napster on my phone as we speak. And it says Rhapsody is now Napster. Start your free trial. So it follows the same precedent that it used to before when it launched, you know, but obviously the other services have gone and become more successful than Napster because of like maybe the disdain that most of the music industry has towards them. Maybe, you know what I mean? Because that name Napster always has a precedent in history, and especially with the recording industry. Maybe that might have some standpoint on why they are as not mentioned as, you know, say Spotify or Apple Music or even the other ones that exist as of now.
Yeah, no idea, but it's being ran by a bunch of old guys right now, looks like.
So Trump's involved.
He could be.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man. So
maybe
yeah,
it's just Barron.
So yeah, Napster's really been one of the oddest and least predictable rides of any brand name, as you can tell what we went through here.
History has a funny way of repeating itself, and it didn't work out for Napster, basically. Somebody picked up the right way to do it versus the wrong way, and the right way was Pirate Bay. Sorry.
Yeah, and where artists are probably making, I don't know. I mean, I feel like artists are making far less money than they did in the past. That's relatively speaking, just because of more digital and streaming. I mean, artists don't make a ton off Spotify. They make more money selling albums and music themselves. It's just crazy to think that the Napster brand has endured and continued on that long.
Yeah, because I mean, what, 2001 was the lawsuit, and it is now 2020. And if you're still using Napster, you should probably write Chris and tell him why you're using Napster and not using Spotify. That would be an interesting conversation.
Sorry, I went on a tangent here, and I was just kind of looking. My first search for Napster and Spotify, I got a 404 error, so that didn't tell me anything. But I just read that Napster lost over $13 million in 2017. They had a $15 million loss the year before in 2016. And yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. Someone's putting money into this thing, and I don't know why.
It must be a cartel funneling system for money laundering. That's the only way I can see that this is ever working out. Like, there's got to be a show of money going in, but no, just money loss, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, I should have did this ahead of time, but I want to do additional research, like subscriber numbers and things like that.
Because, right.
I mean, just you have Spotify, you have Apple Music, Google Play Music, Amazon Music, and you don't really hear about Napster. So,
yeah, this is wild. Like, I'm looking up, how do I contact Napster customer service? Is Napster still free? How much does Napster cost? $5 to $7. So it is cheaper than the other websites. Let me see. Is Napster better than Spotify? like, these are just like questions that Napster probably paid Google to set up. Oh, wow. Can I burn CDs from Napster? Yes. I don't even know how you would do that in 20. I mean, we could do that off of YouTube now. So, oh man, we're going down the rabbit hole. Napster's going to get sued again just based off this podcast.
Or I'm going to get sued for calling them a bunch of old people. And yeah, who knows?
Who knows? All right, this was fun.
We have reached the end of the show, and it's time for a segment I like to call
Fact or Crap.
This segment is in no way associated with the Fact or Crap board game, so please don't sue me. This gives you, the listener, the opportunity to fact check anything and everything we talked about throughout the episode. If we screwed up, made a mistake, why don't you show me how smart you are, and your message may make it on a future episode of the podcast. All you need to do is email crazedculture@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail line 931-674-1440. That's 931-674-1440. And as for now, let's get back to the future.